In these lessons, I will present you the version of the ontological argument as it has been formulated by Alvin Plantinga. In its relationship with some of the most important and of the most famous of the Kantian critics. And finally, I will propose a new possible reading of the Anselmian text of the Proslogion, my own position on it, that will give a new perspective on the whole question. But now, let's start with Plantinga's position. A brief, very brief biography information about him. Alvin Plantinga is an American analytic philosopher, and he is emeritus professor at the University of Notre Dame. He's a former president of both the Society of Christian Philosophers and the American Philosophical Association. He's often called as analytic theist because of his studies on the classical issues about God with an analytic approach. Actually, he uses the instruments of logic to analyze some of the traditional philosophical questions regarding God. Specifically speaking about the ontological argument, he wrote many books, such as The Nature of Necessity, 1974, The Ontological Argument, 1965, and God and Other Minds, 1967. In God and Other Minds, he proposes an analysis of the ontological argument with a reconstruction of the Anselmian proof in an analytic terms. And then he answers to some of the main critics that traditionally are moved against it. But before the analysis, he makes a couple of very interesting preliminary and general considerations about the argument in itself. In effect, he says that the argument is in some ways special, you know, because despite it is often considered unconvincing, it has always had an extraordinary fashion, and every philosophical author in the history has found it very, very interesting. So he asks, what accounts for this fascination? And the cause is perhaps twofold. He says that there are two characteristics that make the argument so fascinating. The first one is that the ontological argument offers an enormous return on a pretty slim investment. Actually, it starts with a simple premise, that is, the Anselmian definition of God as something that which none greater can be conceived. And standing with that, it succeeds in gaining nothing less than the demonstration of the existence of God. And it's not bad. And the second characteristic is that, although the argument looks at first sight as if it ought to be unsound, it is profoundly difficult to say what exactly is wrong with it. In other words, despite the argument is often considered unsound, probably because of its shortness or its apparent simplicity, no one has ever succeeded in finding where is the mistake. Indeed, it is doubtful that any philosopher has given a really convincing refutation of the ontological argument. Actually, too often, philosophers merely remark that Kant refuted it, Kant rejected the argument, without investigating deeper about the real validity of the Kantian objections. So, according to Plantinga, there is no such a general refutation, and he therefore looks carefully at some contemporary statements of Kant's objections. Now, after these two interesting reflections on the general validity of the argument, Plantinga starts with the analysis of the argument in itself. And he starts by saying that the argument is construct as a reductio ad absurdum, and I agree with him about that. The argument actually is constructed in this way, as it has this structure. A reductio ad absurdum is a kind of demonstration that shows, that demonstrates a thesis by means of the refutation of the opposite position, by showing that the antithesis is contains a contradiction. So, in this way, the Anselmian proof is actually a reductio ad absurdum. Then he starts with the name of God, as it has been defined by Anselm, but by Saint Anselm. So he says that let's use the term God as an abbreviation for the expression, the Anselmian expression, the being that which not greater can be conceived. And with this definition, the argument proceeds as follows. Of course, as I have said, he construed, re-elaborate the Anselmian argument with the analytic method. So his reconstruction of the proof is structured as a logical passages which brings from the premises to the conclusion. And his reconstructions is composed by 7 points, 7 logical points, 7 passages. The first one is this. God exists in the understanding, but not in reality. And this is the assumption for reductio. This, as we can see, is the thesis of the atheist, of the fool, of the Anselmian incipients, the man who have said in his heart, there is no God. So this is the starting point. Of course, it is not the position of Saint Anselm nor the position of Plantinga, but in a reductio ad absurdum, the starting point is the hypothesis that has to be reduced in contradiction. So, with this point, we'll assume that the atheist is right. Let's suppose that the fool, that the incipient, is right, that his thesis could be accepted. And we have this hypothesis. Then, second passage says, existence in reality is greater than existence in the understanding alone. This premise is very important. I invite you to notice this this premise, because in some ways it is the weak point of the whole arguments. In other articles, in other books, in other writings, this premise is also known with the name of principle of the superiority of existence. Why? Because, as we can see, with this principle, we are comparing two kinds of existence. Existence in reality and existence in the understanding. So there is a real existence and a mental existence. So, this in this way, we suppose that these two kinds of existence are actually, it is possible to compare them. And in a Platonic system, from a Platonical point of view, this premise is unproblematic, because we can speak about the ideas which have a consistency, which have a kind of existence, and the real world, so the real object, abstract object and real object. These two kind of object, in a Platonic point of view, are accepted, so we can compare them. And with this principle, we establish that one kind of existence is superior to the other. The existence in reality is superior to something more with respect to the existence in the understanding. Why this is the weak point of the whole argument? This is the weak point because all the authors who do not share this Platonic point of view, of course, will not share this principle, will reject the validity of this principle. And in rejecting this principle, which is the second premise of the whole argument, the argument itself is no more valid for them. And I underline this point because in the new possible reading I will propose in the third lesson, the interpretation of the argument I will give there is not the necessity to use these premises. So this premise, according to me, is not really present in the Anselmian proof, but we will see it later. Now let's pass at the third logical point, the third passage. The third passage says, a being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality can be conceived. This is another premise. What does it mean? It means, in general, to say that a state of affairs is conceivable is to say that there is no logical impossibility in the supposition that it obtains. So, in other words, when we say that a state of affairs is conceivable, we say that it is not contradictory. It does not contain a contradiction. So we can think about it. And to say specifically that a being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality is conceivable is simply to say that it is possible that there is a being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality. That is, it is possible that God exists. So it's not auto-contradictory to think that there is a God. There is no contradiction in the thought that God could exist in reality. And this premise could be accepted by the atheists too, by the fool too. Even the atheists can think that God could exist in reality too. So it is not unreasonable to think to accept this second premise. Now let's go at the fourth passage. Here we see that a being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality is greater than God. It is deduced from number one and from number two. So a being with is God and with that has the existence in reality is greater. Now, in the fifth point, we deduce that a being greater than God can be conceived. And this is deduced from 3 and 4. But now, the fifth point, we can see that is in contradiction with the definition of God we have assumed at the starting point. We have said that God is an abbreviation for the being that which not greater can be conceived. And with the fifth point, we obtain that a being greater than God can be conceived. This is a clear contradiction. So, the starting hypothesis, the absurd hypothesis, brings to contradict the starting definition of God. So, in the and this is the sixth point that for definition established that it is false that a being greater than God can be conceived. It brings to the seventh point, the conclusion, therefore it is false that God exists in the understanding but not in reality. And this from 1 and 6. It is the conclusion of the reductio ad absurdum. So, in this way we have seen how Plantinga reconstruct the argument with an analytic method explaining all the passages in which the proof can be developed. So, for make a summary, he says that the proof is a reductio ad absurdum. The starting point is the definition of God. He uses two premises. One of them is the principle of superiority of existence. That is a controversial premise because it could be accepted in a Platonic view but not in other positions, in other philosophical positions. And the second premise is instead a premise which is reasonable and that can be accepted from all the atheists too. And so we can see that the argument in Plantinga view is valid, but is valid under the conditions we have seen. In the second lesson, we will see how Plantinga answers to some of critics that are moved against this proof and against his specific reconstruction of the proof.